Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, welcome in. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Jaguars Today kicking off live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you today. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight coming up, but in the spotlight, continually in the spotlight for the Jaguars, Jeff, is the ongoing search for a defensive coordinator. Alex Marvez reporting over, I guess, yesterday or the day before that Jim Schwartz is in over the weekend, had an interview. Now it appears by most reporting that he will move on and become the Philadelphia Eagle defensive coordinator today. Doug Peterson, he have not worked together, and they say as long as they hit it off, that's the guy they want to sign, and that's the preferred landing spot for Schwartz, at least according to people who know him. He was out of football this past year, opted to do what I probably would do, sit back and collect his paycheck.
I got a paycheck, and then he also worked with the league office with some of the rules and regulations that kind of govern the on-the-field play.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, as a defensive player and as a defensive end, I would have loved to have played in a system like his because he uses a lot of Y-9. You know, Y-9 is defensive ends are outside, and they're basically you're going after the passer every single down. And then everybody else kind of adjusts on the fly on the inside. It doesn't make for a particularly sound run defense at times.
Right.
But it can be a very big play defense.
You would have been a big proponent then of Jim Schwartz as far as
– Yeah, I mean, heck, I mean, if I could have lined up in a Y-9, you know, 75, 80% of the
might
time –
Might have made a little bit more money
back
along
in the
way.
Day, I mean, you know, double-digit sacks might have happened more than once.
Are you comfortable with the pace of how it's going? I know you told Jeff Prosser a moment ago that, you know, the sooner the better, but do you feel like there's an urgency to it, or does it have to be done by the Senior Bowl, or do you maybe go there if you don't have a guy of Schwartz's caliber and say, let me network with everyone who's going to be there and kind of see what guys may be available that I wasn't even thinking of?
Well, I think you want to make sure that you get it right. You know, and I think last year, you know, we were kind of in the same situation that, you know, they made the decision to move on from Jed Fish early on, but they didn't name Greg Olsen the coordinator until later on. It took some time, but they got it right. You know, at least they appeared to get it right. And so I think the most important thing is to get it right. And so if that means making it happen now or making it happen, you know, a week or 2 weeks from now, whatever that pace is, you just got to get it right. I mean, because this, you know, this is a critical time in the franchise when it comes to it's time to start winning games.
What do you make of the other guy? The other guys certainly don't have coordinator experience that Gus has been connected to interviewing. It could obviously, with the fact that he was interested in Jim Schwartz and this level of guy, I don't think his mind is set on one particular direction, right, in terms of a guy who brings in maybe his own system or variations of the same 4-3 concepts, or a guy like Marquand Manuel, who, you know, has very limited coaching experience, never having been a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I think you know, if you look at what Gus did last year, and that he took his time and he gathered a lot of information by talking to a lot of different people, and one of those people included in that mix was Doug Marrone, and that ended up being a position hire after the coordinator position was named. And so I think Gus is using this as a learning process, and then also part of the process is evaluating his personnel maybe to find out exactly what's going to be the best fit scheme-wise. You know, now they say that they've drafted, and I agree with this, that you've drafted for 3 years for the particular system that you've been running. And so you can't stray too far from that mindset. But at the same time, there's got to be a little flexibility within those parameters that's going to give you some abilities to maybe change some things. And so maybe that's part of the process, and that, you know, Gus is doing some reflection, you know, looking in the mirror of his system, and then also evaluating of other systems and seeing how that may best fit their personnel. Because typically most of the evaluations don't happen of your own personnel until you get about 2 weeks postseason, because the coach has got about a week off, I think, and then they come back in and evaluate their own personnel. So, you know, I think he's going to make the right decision. He did a very good job last year. You know, the first year he kind of goes ahead and wants to put people around him that he's comfortable with and that he's familiar with. And now he's at the point where, okay, hey, look, I'm comfortable in my own skin. Now it's time for me to do what's best for the team, what's best for the defense, and then also – there's a lot of moving parts. You know, Todd Walsh is, I don't think is going anywhere. He could be a factor. He could be the defensive coordinator. Or he could be a guy that would work hand in hand with whatever the new defensive coordinator is, and maybe it's a work of two guys that really build what it's going to be, and that might be Todd Walsh and whoever else they bring in. And you mentioned about guys that have not a lot of experience. Well, Todd Walsh has a lot of experience, so maybe the chemistry, if you can find the right fit chemistry-wise with two guys, because Todd Walsh has been the run game coordinator, and you can find somebody that has the ability to play, to call the plays on game day, because that's a big thing, I think, in my mind, is the ability to call plays and to get yourself in the best position for your players to succeed. Maybe it's two guys meshing together. It's going to be interesting to see what they do, though, from a scheme standpoint. And I know a lot of people want to see a drastic change in the scheme because what they were doing is not working. Well, a drastic change or a small change might be perceived as a drastic change in some circles, because this defense that they've been running for the last number of years is not that different from most other 4-3 defenses in the National Football League. It's just not that different.
And, you know, as we've talked about many times, we've seen it work in Seattle, right? It's a matter of having the right personnel to run it. And I think the Jags' feeling is they spent more time over the last few years trying to build the offensive side of the football. Not that they totally neglected the defensive side, but this is going to be the offseason to really focus on that side of the football.
Well, you got to get some speed, and you've got to get edge pressure, you know, or pressure of any sorts of that matter. I mean, what they've been dealing with you go 2 years ago, where they had a large number of sacks, and they were able to do it with Clemens and Branch and send Eric on the inside. I think it was skewed a little bit. You know, you didn't have a lot of guys that were very effective on the outside getting consistent pressure. I think the percentage of hits, in other words, sacks that they got with opportunities, was very high that year. And so this year it has to be a concerted effort to where you get guys that can affect the passer from the edge. And Dante Fowler certainly will help that. The return of Cedric Marks will help that. But you can't count on either one of them. You know, both of them are coming back from injuries. I mean, just like last year, I think they counted on Cedric being back at a certain point and being an effective player. And I think that assumption hurt them, because I think that they said, okay, well, we've got Cedric. Let's put Audric, you know, in the mix, and Audric can play the strong side in. It didn't work out.
But do you go into the offseason, though, saying – I can't completely count on Cedric, so we got to pretend he's not part of the roster, and we've got to draft and approach free agency accordingly? Or do you just say, in the back of my mind, I'm hoping I see this piece fitting in, and I got to play the percentages of, you know, what percent I think he's going to be able to come back to his former self? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think you always assume that he's going to be unavailable. And the reason I say that, what would be the difference if Cedric were completely healthy and all of a sudden he gets hurt for the first time? Let's say he never had an injury before, and all of a sudden he's playing this year. You can't assume, as your general manager personnel-wise, that, okay, look, we're fine there. We don't need to address that. You always have to be able to supplement the depth, because in the event of injury, which, I mean, this past weekend I think was the perfect example of that. Look at all the teams that were playing this past weekend that were playing with guys that weren't frontline guys and were still able to have performance that was at a satisfactory level because of the depth that they had. This team needs more depth, and it needs more critical depth. And critical depth is at the premium positions, and right now they don't have it.
All right, here's Jeff Logman. I'm Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here as well. It is Jaguars today. Just getting rolling today. The fan feedback question of the day is this. We understand the importance of free agency in the draft for the Jags every offseason, but particularly this offseason in 2016. But today we're going to look at some of their own guys that they would perhaps like to retain. And so we've tweeted out and also posted on the Jaguars Today Facebook page a link to a list of the Jacksonville Jaguars pending free agents. And we'll read through those as well for those of you who may not be online right now. And today's question is simple. Out of all the free agents that the Jaguars have from their own team, which one is the most important that the Jaguars re-sign to have success in 2016 and beyond? So we'll get into that. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Logs56, LOGS56, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. Also, today we've got a bevy of new mock drafts out, both from the guys at NFL Network and CBSSports.com. So we'll touch on those as we go along today. Also talk about the job that Doug Marrone has done this year for from Jeff's point of view, as he's garnered and had garnered some interest as a potential head coaching candidate in some cities, and whether or not Jeff thinks that means he's a lock to be back now as the offensive line coach now that he didn't get any of those vacancies to get his next head coaching job in the National Football League. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. It's Jaguars Today, live from EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Lagerman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, happy Tuesday. 641-1010, the number if you'd like to get on board with Jeff Logman. We're running out of days with Loggy here. Yeah, Glenn Frey passed away.
Yeah, we got one more.
Is it one more next week, right? And then yeah. We're gone for the
and
Super Bowl.
And you guys
Bowl.
Are out of town.
Yep. So maybe a periodic pop-up in the offseason from time to time.
Yeah, we can make that happen.
Glenn Frey was, what, 67, I think? Was that what he was when he passed away? I heard the guys debate it this morning. I love the Eagles. I think, to me, they're the greatest American rock band of all time. I consider them a rock band. You can consider them
whatever
you like.
Oh, they're a rock band all the way. And I actually, back then it was 8-tracks, and I actually was buying the Eagles on 8-tracks.
You were not buying 8-tracks. Get out. How old are you?
48.
So you're 1 year older than me, and you were buying 8-tracks. I guess if you were buying them when you were like 10
grade
or
school.
12, right?
Yeah, grade school.
All right. My uncle was big into the 8-tracks. I just did the 45s back then, and I did LPs.
So
we
never
had an 8-track player.
I wasn't big into records. I mean, it was, I think, when music really started coming out. I mean, I was an 8-track guy.
Yeah.
And I can remember Eagles, Foreigner, you know, about the same time, you know, on 8-track, and was rocking them.
I would put the Eagles for me. The Who and U2 are at the tops of my list. They might be number three, honestly, overall. There's not a bad damn song that they've ever done. That's ever gotten a radio airplay.
It's all good. I mean, it's like the Beatles, you know. And I'm not a huge Beatles fan, but, I mean, every song you hear from the Beatles is really good.
Right. Beatles are great, too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they're a more important group in the history of music.
Be careful now with Beatles now. Fortunato's roaming the hallways here now. He is a diehard Beatles fan.
Well, you know, last year, I don't know if he did it this year, he and Tom Champion from over at 1010 did the whole Abbey Road tour when they went over to London.
Oh, yeah.
You know, did the whole
thing. Yeah, got the pictures.
I don't know if he took his
Abbey
shoes
Road.
Off or not, but when he crossed the street, but nevertheless. And they're talking about who was a bigger boy in the music world, Glenn Frey or Don Henley. I think it's Don Henley, hands down.
I mean, both of them are big.
Oh, they're both great, but if you're picking one. And they're talking about, you know, you watched Miami Vice back in the day.
What ended up being the cause of death?
I heard them say rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh, geez.
This morning. I didn't know that was something that caused you to die.
I remember, you know, the headlines were he was found dead, and you know, you always want to know what happened.
Wasn't the story with him that he was like one of the hardest partiers in rock and roll? When he was young and the
Which
Eagles
in that
were
era,
heyday.
Is, you know, I mean, who wasn't?
But then, didn't he turn it around? Didn't he become like a spokesman for gyms? I think I saw him. He was doing like
workout gyms,
like workout stuff. Like he completely flipped and went from being one of the most decadent partiers to being like a straight edge, all about his body kind of guy. If I'm not mistaken about that, but nevertheless, R.I.P. Glenn Frey. Mm-hmm. Eagles, obviously. Never be the same again.
No.
So there you have it. All right, let's take a look around what's going on with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we'll get to the phone lines here. Jeff, Doug Marrone was mentioned as possibly Miami, Cleveland, and certainly Tennessee all having various levels of interest in him as a head coaching candidate. And we've discussed the fact that he left them 9-7. They got a better quarterback on board, and Rex Ryan led him to an 8-8 season. Probably speaks well in Doug Marrone's favor for what he was able to get out of that football team. My question to you is this, because people have asked, you know, how good of a job did he do with the Jaguars? And I think we felt, Tony and I discussed this yesterday, Luke Joeckel and Zane Beatles, overall, last game of the season, particularly for Joeckel notwithstanding, overall were a little bit better this year, but they couldn't run the ball. Blake still took way too many sacks. How good of a job can you assess that Doug Marrone did with the offensive line this year?
Well, I think he did a good job, but I think also, you know, part of that credit is shared also from the general manager of doing a better job with personnel on the offensive line, because the year before you were basically essentially starting rookies across the board. I think the additions of A.J. Cann helped immensely. The improvement of Zane Beatles, the improvement of Luke Jokel, both helped immensely. And as far as running the football, I think also you'll get better running the football the more power you get up in the interior of your offensive line, because that's where it's at. And I think next year will be a significant jump in running the football, because I think Zane Beatles is out. I think that Brandon Linder, whether he's left guard or right guard, he's going to make them better. He's their best offensive lineman, period. And having him back is going to help immensely. Now, A.J. Cann's going to be back in there. He's very strong. I think that you'll have either competition certainly improvement at the center position. So I think that makes them better. They're going to be better at all three interior spots next year with the return of Brandon Linder, the experience under the belt of A.J. Cann, whether it's Tyler Shatley at center, whether it's a free agent acquisition at center, or whether it's Wisniewski another year playing alongside these guys, it's going to be better. And I think they're going to be in a little bit of a quandary as to what to do with Brandon Linder when he does come back. Do you leave A.J. Cann on the right side? Does Brandon Linder make Luke Jokel better just because he's lining up alongside him? And I think it will. Zane Beatles, if you look, he had a much better year when it comes to just overall performance. But you've heard the company line, we need to get stronger inside. Well, I mean, it's I don't want to say it's an indirect shot at Zane Beatles, but, I mean, let's be real. Zane Beatles was not very powerful.
It may not be a shot, it's just a fact.
It's just reality. You go to the goal line in London where they had, first and goal at the one, and you could point to Zane Beatles on every one of those plays as giving up pressure penetration that negated those plays. You go to other short yardage plays as part of the end of the year process. I'm putting film together to look at A.J. Cann and also Jeremy Parnell for Jaguars.com feature that I'm going to be doing. And what kind of seems to continue to come up in the run game is the lack of strength at the left guard position. And Zane Beatles is not a powerful guy, doesn't play with very low pad level. So I think they're going to get better there automatically with the guys that are going to be playing there next year. I look forward to watching the development of Tyler Shatley. I've been beating his drum here since training camp. He's incredibly strong. He's competitive. The injury that he had coming out of training camp kind of set him back. I believe it was a thumb or a hand injury that held him back. And because you remember early in the season, Bowanko was active early on. And then once Shatley got back to health, then it was Shatley who was active on game day. He's an incredibly powerful man. He hasn't played center for very long, so there's a little concern there. Do you trust him, playing center? I don't see why you wouldn't, based on Wisniewski's snaps this year. They were kind of iffy at times and bad at a couple times. So I think they're going to be significantly better, and Doug Marone was a part of that. But I also think the personnel was a big part of that and is going to get better this year.
All right, 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board, phone lines open to you right now as there's a little look at the job Doug Marone did and the state of the offensive line as they head into the 2016 offseason. Here's the list of free agents that the Jags have, their own guys. I'll just throw it out there for folks who are not online right now. The question of the day is, which of these players is the most important for the Jaguars to retain? Okay, now, some of these are restricted free agents, and those guys are likely going to be retained, and that would include Avery Jones, and Ryan Davis, along with Nick Jacobs. I think the first two are guys being restricted free agents under the Jaguars' control. We'll see both of those guys
back.
I think
anywhere.
Jacobs has exclusive rights. He's either going to be
right
here or nowhere.
You're correct. He is an exclusive rights free agent for Nick Jacobs. The others, the unrestricted free agents, Mercedes Lewis, Chad Henne, Stefan Wisniewski, Andre Branch, Clay Harbor, Brian Anger, Sam Young, Bernard Pierce, and Brian Walters. That's your group of unrestricted free agents for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So with that, we'll leave it open to you if you want to weigh in on the phone lines or on the text or Twitter or Facebook options as well. Let's go to Steve on the north side to lead us off this morning here with Jeff Logman, Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Morning, fellas. How you doing?
Good.
Quick question. I also want to talk about the thing with Chad Henne. Now, Mike, Jeff, you have your job because you guys are good at it. People like to listen to you on the radio.
Debatable. All right.
Yeah.
Jeff, yes.
Debatable.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, good at your job. You're not there just because you get along with Fat Tony and everybody else. And that's what I'm seeing on certain articles with Chad. And it's like, oh, he gets along with Bortles. I mean, not really knocking it, but it's like you got booed off by your fans. You came in as a starter, as a backup. You was given the starting job at the beginning of a season. And it's like, you can't perform. So for the Jaguars to even entertain keeping Chad Henne, it's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't get it.
Well, you're talking about a backup role here. I mean, we're not talking about a frontline guy. You're talking about, you know, you got to compare apples to apples here. I mean, you can't compare, you know, Chad Henne to a starter. It's not what he is. I mean, you have to compare Chad Henne to other backups around the league, the quality that he would present, and make it relative to the pay that he's getting relative to other backups around the league. And I think that he's a quality backup to what he is. You know, it's not like you're sitting there saying, okay, well, you know, Chad Henne's our guy. It's not what he is.
Well, what is – because I think Steve's point, I don't think it's an unfair one, is that Henne had the chance to start, right, and he did extremely poorly. And that's prompted a quick –
You're going back to
Blake Bortles.
You're going back to 14.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But, I mean, that's the last time he played.
Sure.
So, I think Steve's point is, well, if Blake did get hurt, what can we really expect out of Chad because he didn't perform for us last time? So, I guess if I'm asking you to make the case, if you're Chad's agent, right, mm-hmm. you're making the case for why Chad Henne fits with this team. Because Steve brought up something that is brought up by a lot of fans. He's got a good relationship with Blake.
Yeah,
and
who
he's,
cares?
Who cares? I'm not worried about the relationship, but is there something that Blake benefits from that relationship? Like, is Henne really good in the film room? Is he a good, you know, guy who's been around the league and it helps him, you know, learn different defenses and what they're trying to do? I mean, what is the big pitch for Henne that you would make?
All right, well, I mean, I'll make a pitch without being Henny's agent.
Sure.
You know, I mean, first of all, the relationship that he has with Blake Bortles, to me, it doesn't matter at this point, you know, because Blake Bortles is, you know, he's a big boy now, okay? He's a starting quarterback of a football team. He's got games under his belt. But you still want to have a good working relationship with a starting quarterback and a backup quarterback. Now, to evaluate Chad Henne going back to 14, you know, you got to evaluate it based on what he was playing with. I mean, he had, you know, Brandon Leonard at right guard. He had Luke Boanko at center.
Bunch of rookies.
A revolving door at right tackle. He had a poor playing Zane Beadles at left guard. He had Luke Jokel in his first starting season ever at left tackle. He had three rookie wide receivers. He had a veteran tight end and a running back core that really wasn't even – much to talk about, you know. So you can't evaluate Chad Henne's performance just as Chad Henne's performance alone going back to 2014. I mean, I don't care if it's, you know, all-world quarterback going back to 14. I think anybody would have had a hard time performing with that football team and as an offense.
We saw Aaron Rodgers struggle by his standards this year because they had poor protection. And he lost one of his key playmakers, and some of the other ones underperformed this year. Eddie Lacy finally got called out for something we all could see with our own eyes.
He's
the guy
fat.
Was fat as can be.
Oh, he's fat.
Right? And finally, Mike McCarthy, despite the fact that they all denied, oh, Eddie's fine. Eddie's in great shape. Why do they say that? I don't understand. It's obvious. You look at the guy.
Well, it's not what you say in public. It's what you say in private.
I guess. You're right. But nevertheless, my point being, you know, that what's around you obviously is going to impact the quarterback. I'm not trying to compare Henne to Aaron Rodgers, so everybody calm down before you go down that road. But Steve, would appreciate the call.
I think he's a good backup.
I think you're right. In terms of what you're – a guy who is not going to be lost when he comes in. He's going to know the offense. He's going to be prepared. He can make the throws, that kind of thing.
Well, here's another thing to add. Chad Henne's been durable his entire career, okay? And because he's durable and he has played the game – at an acceptable level, okay? Acceptable level means okay. Means he's going to be as good as those around him. It allows you to carry two quarterbacks on the roster, which allows you to keep another positional player somewhere else, you know, because he is durable. So if you've got a starter, Blake Bortles has shown that he's durable, okay, and you have a backup who has relatively low miles, who has been durable, who has been an adequate quarterback, and his pay level is equal to about the quality of the level of play that he can give you, you're in a good situation there. because of the durability of quarterback one and quarterback two. You know, so to me, it's a win situation to keep him. And I don't think you're going to have a highly competitive market because Chad Henne is no longer competing at the top tier for a starting job in the National Football League.
Would you compare maybe to kind of like Ryan Fitzpatrick, where he's been a journeyman type, and then he gets – you look what happens when, you know, he's got the best receiving core he ever had to play with. He had his best season. So if you put Henne with all the right pieces around him, he can get you through a month. I mean, that's all you're really hoping for. You're just looking for a guy that can get you through two or three games and hopefully not anything more than that, because there are a few teams that are going to make a deep postseason run with their backup quarterback. I understand it's happened throughout the course of history.
Yeah,
but
look at the other quarterbacks around the league, you know, that are backups. You know, who are the best backups? I mean, you got any that you would just rave about?
I mean, I'd have to go team by team. Probably.
Yeah, I mean, going into the season, I mean, Brock Osweiler was good. I don't think you knew how good
he
was.
Play.
You didn't know.
Right.
I mean,
you thought he might be good.
It's that kind of thing. And it's something we've talked about with John Osher, too, covering Indianapolis for all those years where they were struggling to find anybody that was willing to come be the backup to Peyton Manning.
Right.
Because they weren't going to play. So you have to invest the draft picks in them. You see New England do it. They keep investing in quarterback in the draft, and they get their guys ready because of the system they run. But it's a problem that Jacksonville's probably going to run into soon here, is that guys like Chad Henne aren't going to want to be the backup in Jacksonville for very long. Matt Hasselbeck signed at Indianapolis the year they drafted Andrew Luck, and it was after he got released by Tennessee. It becomes difficult to find a quality guy instead of having to develop a guy when you have a franchise quarterback.
You're fine. I mean, if you can retain Chad at an acceptable pay level, you keep him.
Yeah, and it would seem like they would want to make that a point of doing that. All right, Steve, thank you for the call. We got to take a break. We're getting a little bit behind right here, but we'll come back. If you're on the line, stay right there. We'll go to your calls next at 641-1010 with Jeff Loggeman and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more with Jeff Loggeman, brought to you by Roland Reich Plumbing on Jaguars Today. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And we challenge them. You know, I think the big part right now in this offseason is to get stronger. You know, utilize this time, not for the running and the conditioning, although they'll do some of that, but to get in that weight room and just put on the right kind of weight and become stronger. And if that group does that as a whole, then that's a pretty good group now. We like the changes they made. We like the additions that have been brought in, and then, you know, the progress they made.
That's Gus Bradley earlier this month, as a matter of fact, talking about exactly what you were talking about. Maybe that was a quote you're referring to, the need to get stronger on the interior for the offensive line. I cannot hear this. This is a great song. I cannot hear this without thinking of Seinfeld.
Me either.
Right. I mean, it just.
I was picturing that guy in that car right now.
Second, I hear the first notes of Desperado, I think of Seinfeld. Were you a Seinfeld guy? Because there was an episode based around this song.
Oh.
Of Seinfeld.
What a Seinfeld guy.
No?
No, actually, when I was in New York, that's when Seinfeld was in its heyday. Do you remember there was an episode with Keith Hernandez?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, the Magic Loogie.
The second spitter.
Yeah.
They were actually
back.
They had contacted me in New York and said they wanted me to look. They were looking at me to play that part. And it was either me or Keith Hernandez.
Are you serious? Dude, you would have been immortalized.
I guess, but I wasn't a Seinfeld guy.
Oh my gosh! Somebody get him new agent. Somebody should have known. You don't need to be a Seinfeld.
It's like
guy.
He went on a date with. Didn't he go
Elaine?
On a date?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Keith Hernandez, no offense to
I got
to
one
you.
Phone call, and then they said, you know, we wanted you to do this thing with Seinfeld, and I was like, and I'd known the show because I lived in New York.
Right.
And they were like, hey, we're looking to have this part. Would you be interested? I said, yeah, just let me know what you want to do. Well, then that was the last call I got. It ended up being Hernandez.
Hernandez is more nationally known than you. Had you taken the part? You would, I'm telling you, you would five times as many people would know who you are right now than, and that's not a knock on you, man. You're an accomplished
that's what
guy
New York,
and all that.
I mean, that's what New York does. I mean, New York is, it's a huge market.
Absolutely.
I mean, opportunities that you had, you know, playing in New York were immense, you know, and the number of people that you got to meet, it was incredible. I mean, I got to meet some people that. I mean, if I played in Kansas City or Jacksonville or wherever else, I mean, you just wouldn't have had that opportunity to meet all these different people. I mean, Paul Newman and Danny Glover, Matt Dillon. I mean, all these different guys. I mean, Cindy Crawford. I remember went to a charity event one time and met Cindy Crawford and had dinner with her and a couple other people at a table. That was cool, man. It was all cool stuff. Robert De Niro, met Robert De Niro one time. Yeah, and that was probably one of the coolest meetings because De Niro had, like, the upstairs rented out at the Hard Rock, Hard Rock Cafe.
Uh-huh.
And we had come in there, I think it was on a Sunday night after a game or something like that, to where we were there as a group. And it was me and probably four or five other guys on the team. And a guy comes downstairs and he says, hey, look, you know, we have a party going on upstairs. And would you guys mind coming up and maybe signing some autographs for the kids? Like, when a guy came and asked me, and I said, yeah, yeah. So I grabbed, you know, Marvin and all the other guys that we were there with, and we walk on up the stairs, and it's Robert De Niro's kid. And Robert came up and shook our hand, thanked us, and said, you know, really, really thank you guys for coming up and, you know, taking the time. We signed autographs for the kids, and it was cool. Got to meet Robert De Niro, you know. But, I mean, that's New York. I mean, it's not a big deal. You know, I mean, you see
people
like
it is. A little bit of
well, I mean, it is, but I mean, you know, in New York, I mean, that's New York, though, you know? I mean,
that was my De Niro, by the way. Sorry, that went
right over my head,
man. It's, went sailing right over. No, I hear what you're saying, man. But, you know, I'm a Yankee fan. I remember Danny Tartable playing for the Yankees. A lot of people remember the fact that Danny Tartable exists because he was on Seinfeld, you know, back in the day when he was, you know, appearing in a Yankee uniform. Trust me on this one. All right, let's go to the phones and get back to the calls here. We got them stacked up. Let's go to Desmond on the south side. Good morning, Desmond. How are you?
All right, how are y'all? I'd like to ask y'all for one question. I heard the first statement when Lawrence was talking about getting people that's interior backups. All right, we so focused on, we know the defense is the main problem, but I don't want us to overlook the offense. Like, for example, like, what if Allen, God forbid, but what if Allen Robinson, Allen Hurst, what if they get hurt? And we overlooking the right steel core, and because we're so focused on defense, I just like to say, well, y'all think we should pick a right receiver, like, in the late round, like, 56th round, you know?
Well, you got Rashad Green, you got Brian Walters, you got Marquise Lee, I mean, behind the front line guys, I mean, you know. I mean, look, you only get so many opportunities to upgrade your roster. It's not like you've got 50 guys you're going to bring in here and say, okay, we're going to improve the roster. You know, so, I mean, your attention, your focus needs to be on the delinquent positional groups. You know, wide receiver is probably the least delinquent of all positional groups. I mean, you've got guys that you're sitting there going, how can we find them ways to get the ball? You know, because you just don't have enough balls to go around at that position group. That is not a position group that you need to look at and say, we need to draft in a second round or a third round or fourth round. But now, look, if you get an undrafted guy and you can bring him in here and let him compete, and all of a sudden he shows something that you didn't even think was possible, great.
Does Neil Sterling have a chance to help, or will he be more of a move tight end?
I think his best position is a move tight end. I really believe that.
All right.
You know, I think that or he could be a guy – that does both, you know, because you know what? The way that they play the move tight end in Julius Thomas is a lot of times like a wide receiver. And so I think that with Neil, if they can cross-train him to do both, it would be exceptional, and it would give him great value on game day because he could play the move tight end, and he could also know the route trees and the wide receiver position. Be perfect for him, and it would give him great value.
All right, let's get to another call here. Ken is on the west side checking in this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing today? Hello, Jeff and everybody. Hey, I think you touched on something earlier with Zane Beatles because I wanted to touch base on Luke Jokel, and I'm not particularly fond of the way he gets beat by all the speed rushers, but I wonder how much some of that is the weakness on the position right beside of him in Zane Beatles impacting his play, knowing that he may have to do even a little bit more on that. And I'm wondering, can he ever become an elite left tackle? Because I'm worried about Wardle's getting hit on the blind side too much.
All right, to answer your last question, can he become an elite left tackle? My answer is no. You know, and this was my kind of last year of saying, okay, this is the year that you're going to figure out whether he can be or not. My answer is no. can he get better with improved play beside him? Absolutely. The games that that those two have to deal with on the left side, there was one game in particular. It was the last game where you had, I think it was Jared Crick, ends up beating Zane Beatles up the field quickly. And then Zane Beatles was the one who gives up the pressure to, I think it was J.J. Watt. Well, look, if he's got to chase J.J. Watt from the center position all the way to a wide nine, which is about a 7-yard area, who can block J.J. Watt in a 7-yard area? Nobody can, you know. So, but Zane Beatles would definitely have an improved positional player there would help Luke Joeckel, but at the same token, Luke Joeckel has to get better. You know, is he capable of being an adequate left tackle? Yes. Can he be an above-average left tackle? Yes. Can he be an elite left tackle? In my mind, no.
All right, there you go. Ken, thank you for the call as well. 641-1010. Let's get one more in before we break here, and that will be Travis on the south side. Travis, you're on Jaguars today. Go ahead, buddy.
How y'all doing today?
Good. What's up?
Good. My question is about Nick Marshall. I've been reading some of these articles, and they're saying that we're going to move him to safety. Now, the problem I have with that is, obviously, when he was coming out of college, he wasn't going to be a quarterback. So we put him at corner, and he's so-so there. But I think we need a safety that has experience for that free safety to really roam around and do what we need him to do. My main question to you is, do you think he can become a safety with switching positions so soon in his career from corner to safety?
Yes. Do I think that he can be a great safety? I don't know. But if you looked at his body of work, 1 year removed from being a quarterback in college football, I mean, I think he did a tremendous job. Now, I think they had in the back of their mind, look, we want an athlete back there. Let's put him at one position. Let's let him settle down and learn playing one position only. Okay, now he did that. And he showed ball skills. He showed anticipation. He showed length. He showed the reaction that's required to be able to play the position. Does he have the range to play safety? You know, his speed is in that 4.4 range. So, I mean, he's got some speed that he could allow him to play that free safety position. Would you like to find a guy who's been doing it through a college career and was born and raised playing safety? Yes. But you can't fix everything in 1 year. You know, so if you can't go and get a guy that's going to step in right away and, okay, he's your guy, without a doubt, hands down, then you have to have some flexibility. Much like I talked about, you know, Neil Sterling being able to play, you know, move tight end and wide receiver. If Nick Marshall can play safety and play corner, it's going to give him great value, you know. But I think he has the one thing I think that you need to have at any defensive back position, and that's ball skills. And if you evaluated the number of balls that were contested when the ball was thrown his direction versus maybe a Dwayne Grotz. Now, I don't know what the number is exactly, but I would be willing to bet that Nick Marshall had more contested balls in his area than a Dwayne Grotz.
All right, we appreciate the call, Travis. Yeah, I'm with you. When they say they want to move him to free safety, I don't think they're saying we expect him to be the opening day starter at free safety. We hope he develops into a, you know, or a safety, free safety or strong, but I think free is probably where they envision him. I think it's more, well, let's see what he can turn into there, but it's not like you're counting on him to be your front line.
No,
guy.
I mean, you never count on that. I mean, you can't say, okay, well, we're good. You know, free safety's taken care of. We've got Nick Marshall making the move. No, you don't take that attitude. But I think the most impressive thing about him is how many college quarterbacks have you ever seen that have made the transition in 1 year and looked as good as Nick Marshall in that very first year?
Well, you don't often see it go, at least that I can recall, going straight to play defensive back. We've seen some more guys like Antoine Randall-El, Cordell Stewart be offensive gadget-type weapons slash wide receivers. But beyond that, not too many I could think of off the top of my head.
And here's the thing I think that might have been the most impressive is his tackling. Yeah, he tackled pretty well. Yeah. I mean, you don't think that quarterbacks are going to be great tacklers,
right,
or good tacklers, and I thought that he was a good tackler.
Probably helps that he was, you know, a running quarter, or predominantly a lot of running. You know what I mean?
He's got some experience.
He's getting hit more, right. You know what I mean? He's just – it wasn't standing back in the pocket and getting protected the whole time. He was out there exposed to contact a lot more than a lot of quarterbacks.
He's
are.
Got some athleticism. There's no doubting that.
No question.
You know, and so is he a guy that, you know, when I was going back and talking about quality depth, I mean, here's a guy that's got – clearly he's got a lot of athleticism. And you hope that he can continue and develop and make steps and progress in the direction that he can be a quality starter or, at the very least, a quality backup.
All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back to Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Straight ahead, more of your calls. And at 641-1010 with Jeff Loggeman and Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Honda dealers.
With Kansas City losing in the divisional round of the playoffs on Saturday, the Philadelphia Eagles could officially announce now former Chiefs offensive coordinator Doug Peterson is their new head coach. He will be introduced at a news conference later today. Seattle linebacker Bruce Irvin, who is set to become a free agent this offseason, said yesterday that he may be willing to take less money to stay with the Seahawks. There were stories last offseason that made it sound like Irvin was done with Seattle after this year and that a deal was virtually in place for him to go to Atlanta. But now after another season, he seems to have changed his tone at least a little bit. New England Patriots linebacker Jamie Collins suffered an oblique strain during their win on Saturday, but says that he plans on playing in the AFC Championship game in Denver this weekend. Collins could be limited in practice all week long for the Pats.
Shoot it up. Shoot it up.
Spit on it. Wrap it up.
Yeah, shoot it up. I mean, it is probably one of the most painful injuries I've ever had. Had an oblique injury, and it was like a and I don't know if it's necessarily a muscle a lot of times. A lot of times it's the cartilage between the ribs, you know, which is in the oblique area. And had it in college one time, and they used to just shoot it up. You know, they like shoot it like five or six different places to try to get it covered because it's kind of hard to pinpoint it. It's not like you can sit there and make an X and say it needs to go right here.
Yeah.
And played, I think, two different games with it shot up in college one time. And I'm going to tell you now, everything you do involves an oblique. I mean, breathing, bending, hitting, because your torso and your core is always being used, an incredibly painful injury. And he's an excellent football player for the Patriots. If he can't play, they're going to miss him in a big way.
All right. Looking, a couple of people have made this point on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Nick Marshall, of course, was a defensive back in high school.
Right.
You know, and but it worth noting in the mm-hmm. discussion that we were having about him. Were you surprised by any of the results this past weekend? Did you like all the home teams?
Yeah, I like the home teams, but you jumped up and down a couple different times, yelled at the TV set a few different times, was Green Bay, Arizona.
Sure.
The decision that Bruce Arians had to throw the football there at the end of the game, you're like, what are you doing?
Right.
For real? I mean, when he even had the last play on the Hail Mary to even have an opportunity to tie it up. But a great football game. Carson Palmer looked terrible. Made some plays there to where he had to make plays. But to me, that was the game of the week.
Where's your lean for the two championship games right now?
Well, I mean, a couple weeks ago, I picked Seattle and New England. I'm still going to stick with New England. Even though what Tom Brady is like 2-6 at Denver, I guess, you know, which is not a particularly
one of the few
strong
places
record.
He struggles, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm still going to stick with him. The NFC, that's a tough one now. Carolina's got the home field advantage, played lights out in the first half. Seattle, I don't know what the hell they were doing at the beginning of that ball game. You would have thought that they'd never been there before. It was like they were sleepwalking at the beginning part of that game. Russell Wilson was terrible.
He looked flustered.
Terrible.
Right? I mean, like, who is this guy? And then he put on that show in the second half.
Terrible in the first half. The first 5 minutes of the game, he was terrible. You know, this is a tough one to pick, but I just – you know, I go back to – to kind of what I've been saying, and that Bruce Arians has done a marvelous job, even though he had a terrible decision there in that ball game. I just think they're a better team. But at the same token, Carolina, you know, we keep doubting them. We keep doubting them, and they keep winning.
And they showed you what they're capable of in that first half.
That offensive line that they have, and I think you could say this for the entire game, I think some of the play calling in the second half was not very good by Mike Shula. And that they kind of got away from – they tried to win the clock, which I understand, look, that probably ended up securing them the victory. But the way that they kind of got conservative, they started to run some of this little keeper stuff with Cam Newton. Look, just hand the ball off to the running backs and let Cam Newton be a thrower because he's a good thrower, better than I think what he's been in years past. But I just – that's a tough one to pick now. I think the game that I can't wait – I mean, I can't wait to watch both of them, but the one that really kind of intrigues me the most because I don't know how it's going to go is that Arizona-Carolina game. I just don't. I have no idea how that's going to go.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago I told Tony I liked Arizona and maybe one of the wild card teams in the AFC. Well, certainly the wild card teams are long gone, but, boy, it's hard to – ignore how good Carolina looked for a half of football and what, you know, you saw them in peak form, but we've seen Arizona recently in peak form as well. Now, they ended week 17 in bad fashion. They got blown out by Seattle, and I think nerves were evident in this football game. Bruce Arians admitted as much. He hopes they can just go out and play football. It's an interesting dynamic, though, Jeff, because last year they went on the road to Carolina as a 7-8-1 division winner. The Panthers hosted them, and of course they had Ryan Lindley at quarterback by that point. They had gone through a bunch of guys. They had no chance. So I think they feel like had they had their guy last year, they might have made a run to the Super Bowl. So we'll see if they're able to do that this week. And if you want to get in, 641-1010, any aspect of the Jaguars or the National Football League is fair game with Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey here with you. We'll come back, and I want to get your thoughts on an interesting comment that Dave Caldwell made last week with you on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll do that coming up next here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's not a hurdle, and you know, Gus's situation is very fluid, and although he's on a 1-year contract now, it doesn't mean that necessarily moving into the season he'll be on a 1-year contract either.
That's Dave Caldwell last week filling in for Gus Bradley on the season finale of the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman was hosting with Dave Caldwell. He always does a terrific job. He's as open pretty much any GM in the league when I hear these kind of Q&A type scenarios, Jeff, but the question you asked him was in searching for a new defensive coordinator, you look and you say, oh, Gus Bradley, 12-36, he's got 1 year left. What is my job security going to be, right? I think that's a reasonable thing.
Well, I asked the same question to Gus the week before when he was on, and I said, will this be a hindrance to you hiring a guy because, you know, you're on a 1 year deal, and when you're competing with 7 openings into the National Football League. If a guy's got a choice to go here on a 1 year deal, which typically, you know, a coordinator will match the length of the contract to the head coach versus going to Philadelphia.
Jim Schwartz,
or
right?
Whatever.
Right. Brand new coach.
3 years.
Fresh start.
Security,
right?
Because, you know, the coach's contracts are guaranteed. Would that be a problem? And Gus didn't seem to think so. And he kind of touted, you know, the great relationship with Shad and Dave, and that's all fine and dandy, but, you know, when you're, you know, trying to get security for yourself and your family.
Right, Jim Schwartz didn't have that relationship.
No, so I asked the same question of Dave, and I was not surprised by it because, you know, very few coaches go into the last year of their contract without having, you know, maybe a year tacked on or whatever. Tom Coughlin, same type of thing. You know, last year he was going into the final year of his contract. He had another year tacked on. I'm not trying to compare Tom and Gus. Obviously, Tom has won 2 Super Bowls, but it's just very rare that that happens. You know, and some people may be upset. Why, you know, what has Gus done that warrants an extension with the record that he has? And my comment to that is that, look, just because if he gets an extension of 1 year doesn't mean that you can't fire him. I mean, that's always a possibility.
So then let me, as a devil's advocate, I would say, then why give it to him at all? Why commit yourself to more money?
I think the reason why is that if that's still there, much like the conversation was when Shad Khan came out and made the comment prior to the Houston game, was to eliminate the conversation about it. And I think with a coach, if he's going into the last year of the conversation, then every year it's going to be like the Gus tracker. You know, is Gus going to get fired? Is he doing enough to save his job?
There was a lot of that this year, right?
No, I mean, I'm just saying is that it helps eliminate that conversation from happening on a week-to-week basis all the time.
It probably tones it down a little
sure.
bit. But like I point out, you know, this year, there's plenty of that conversation this year, even though Gus had another year left on his deal. And I guess I would just say, you know, by that time, the way it seemed like Dave Caldwell said, you know, at some point between now and then, maybe that situation changes. Didn't seem like something was imminent. And therefore wouldn't impact the hiring of a defensive coordinator, because that coordinator is not going to be sure that Gus is going to get any more job security tacked on. And as you said, that's not necessarily security. The security is for the coordinator and the length of years of his deal, as you pointed out, because if those contracts are guaranteed, then you know that's your security. Doesn't mean you'll know where you're going to be working, but you'll know you'll be gainfully employed, whether or not you're actually employed or not. Yeah,
the one thing I think that has really impressed me, you know, certainly it's not the number of wins in the last 3 years, but the level of commitment that Dave has shown Gus and to the organization as a whole, that, you know, you've got to be able to be consistent, because, I mean, the easy decision to make would be that we're going to make a change. And the teams that typically don't have success are constantly trying to catch lightning in a bottle. And, you know, look at the Carolina Panthers. I mean, Ron Rivera, a couple of years ago, the conversation was that, you know, should he be fired? And look where he's at now. I mean, back-to-back division titles. This year he is going to be playing in the NFC title game, when the conversation a couple of years ago about Ron Rivera was that he needs to be fired.
And not necessarily unjustly, though, right?
I mean,
because conditions change. And so,
you know, here's the crazy thing is that, you know, in terms of the National Football League, what's considered unjust?
Right.
You know,
right. Well, you're right.
Tom Coughlin won 2 Super Bowls.
Right.
Is it unjust to have the conversation that he should be fired? I mean,
I don't think it's unjust.
It's crazy, though. I mean, it's just crazy how, you know, that's just the way the conversation is in the National Football League, and it's accepted. That's the way it is.
And what's acceptable in one market, because where the standard has been, is not necessarily acceptable in other markets. Mike Smith does a terrific job getting Atlanta to a plateau they had never been before. Takes a 2-year backslide, got to go.
Right.
You know, people question Marvin Lewis. He can get him to the playoffs. He can't get him past the first round. Well, here you'd be saying, are you kidding me? You're going to give me 5 straight years in the playoffs? That's phenomenal. We would take that in a heartbeat.
But once you've
been there.
Well, once you've been there and you've got experience,
then your
conversation is, wait a minute, are we going to accept this? I mean, this is not good enough. You know, but to me, the commitment that Dave is showing in this process, I mean, to me is remarkable. Because the easy thing to do is to not.
Sure.
Is to not show it. And, look, I don't know how this is going to play out. I don't have a crystal ball. But I just know that consistency and commitment typically breeds more success than inconsistency and indecisiveness. You know, so, I mean, that's a good thing to see. But, you know, Dave's also, you know, basically hitching his wagon to Gus at the same token. You know, could that end up, you know, turn around in future years and bite Dave? I don't know. I mean, the only one that can answer that question is Shad Khan. But the other thing that I appreciated with Dave and going back to his press conference at the end of the year, and it was a conversation that I think me and you had earlier in the year, and it had to do with wins and losses. And I made the comment that I don't care, you know, who the coach was in the first 2 years with this roster and with what the head coach had as far as tools to work with, it would have been extremely difficult for anybody to have any success in that. And Dave basically admitted that. Said, look, you know, we didn't give Gus a lot to work with.
He basically said, in fact, he did say, I'm not going to count his first 2 years record against him.
No, I just appreciate him being honest about that. Because, I mean, to me, that's what I saw. And for him to say that, not many people would say that.
But I think it's an important distinction to make for the fan base as well, because look, the fan base, and you and I have had our debates on this, the fan base saying, or a lot of them, the season ticket holders are saying, well, you know, they don't count, but you counted the money I sent you for those years nonetheless, and the bottom line is it's 12 wins in 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. So where Dave Caldwell is saying, I'm not holding the record against him for the first 2 years, it shifts the point of focus. Even though Shad Khan said a significant improvement, to me, I look at what they should have been this year, or what I thought they should have been, in my opinion, and that's the standard I would hold them to in terms of improving going forward. If Dave Caldwell just says, first 2 years are a pass, Gus starts off 5-11 with a young football team, I think the bar for improvement may be lower for being acceptable in Dave Caldwell's eyes. I understand that acceptable is winning the Super Bowl. That's what they all want to do, right? And so I'm not trying to say that their standards are being lowered, but only one team wins the Super Bowl every year, and you don't fire the other 31 coaches. So what is acceptable to maintain your job is going to be based on in Dave Caldwell's eyes, this is kind of like Gus Bradley's second year, right, in terms of counting and his impact on the team. And for a lot of people out there saying, hey, you know, this is year four for me paying for tickets in the Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell era, I expect X. I expect 9-7 or 10 wins or a playoff berth or whatever. I think Dave Caldwell is letting you know, subtly or otherwise, that that bar is not necessarily that high in 2016. That's the way I interpret it.
I don't interpret that he has lowered the bar. I don't view it that way.
All right, is 8-8, and I get it.
I don't
eight,
know.
8-8 can be good, it can be bad. In your opinion, though, is 8-8 in your gut a good enough season in 2016? No one's going to hold you to it. You're not the decision maker here, but just, you know, weigh in like anybody else.
Well, I mean, I'd like to see what the 8-8 looks
right.
like.
You know, assuming that's Blake's kind of not out for the whole year.
Yeah, what did
like
you
that.
Have injuries-wise? I mean, where did those 8 wins come from? How did the season finish? You know, were the 8 losses, you know, how competitive were they? How did the outcome, you know, fall? So, I mean, it's hard. I mean, to me, I don't think you put a number on it. But I think, you know, 500 has got to be, you know, part of that. You know, you got to start right in there. You know what I mean? It's got to be, you know, 7-8 wins minimum, you know.
Oh, I would think, then, yeah, right. For me,
what does it look like?
Right.
I mean, if it's 5 again, that's a problem.
Before, and maybe I'm interpreting this my own way, but before I heard that comment, to me, 9 wins was what I was looking for out of this team. Because I think this team should have been an 8-win team this year. So
yeah,
I'm not,
I thought 7. I mean, I'm going to stick with what I kind of predicted at the beginning of the year, which was 7.
But
I'm
talking about the way
good.
It played out, though. You know what I mean? Like you predicted 7, I predicted 6. And you could say, well, they only fell a game short. Okay, but you didn't know how the schedule would play out and how, with, you know, half the season left, you had the easiest remaining schedule based on the way teams had performed in the first half of the year and all those things. So, anyway, let's move off from that for a minute here, and let's take a look. A couple new mock drafts out, so let's highlight a couple of the thoughts from the folks at NFL.com as well as CBSSports.com. Almost a consensus, Jeff, everywhere you look, Jalen Ramsey is a popular pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars with number 5. Maybe he'll end up being the Jags pick. Maybe he won't even be there. Maybe they'll evaluate him as the 15th best prospect in the draft. We don't know.
That's the hard part, is trying to – I mean, this time of year, and I made mention of this a little bit earlier, you remember when Johnny Manziel was part of the conversation of could he be the number one quarterback taken, period. And then all of a sudden, you know, you got into away from January and closer to the draft, you know, March or whatever, and people started talking about Johnny Manziel possibly as a 4th-round pick. You know, so it's too early, I think, to forecast. There's too much information that's yet to be gathered. The evaluation at the combines, the individual conversations that teams have with players, and then also the All-Star games, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that has to happen yet, you know, and then also – you've got to find out what the class consists of. You know, the guys are going to be declaring, saying, hey, I'm coming out early. You know, so how will that impact the draft? So
here, let me just give you these 4 guys that we're talking about here. Dane Brugler, who will join us tomorrow late in the program. He was on with us Friday. He dropped his phone in a lake. True story. In the middle of the segment.
I hope he was catching fish.
He was walking his dog, and the dog saw something, and he tried to go after it, and he yanked him, and he dropped the phone right in the lake. So that's a pretty good story.
It's a big dog.
Here's what we've got. We got Rob Rang of CBS Sports, and here's what Rob said. Now, keep in mind, these things for entertainment purposes only, right? They had A'shaun Robinson of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He had him penciled in at number 5 last week. This week he's got him at number 13, going to Philadelphia. So it's been a major shift in his mock draft already. But he said this. He had Jalen Ramsey. He said Blake Bortles emerge as a legitimate franchise quarterback in his second season, leaving the Jaguars likely to build up Gus Bradley's defense. The 6'1", 202-pound Ramsey has the combination of length and fluidity, which will remind Bradley of the corners he coached back in Seattle. That was Rob Rang. This is what Dane Brugler had to say. Same thing, Jalen Ramsey. The Jags have been searching for cornerback help for a long time, but haven't drafted the position in the first round since 1999. Ramsey has experience at safety and corner, but is better categorized as a versatile ball hawk. Then you've got Bucky Brooks of the NFL Network and NFL.com, who did his first mock draft a couple days ago. He went with Jalen Ramsey to the Jags. A pass rusher makes sense at this spot, but it would be hard for Gus Bradley to bypass a dynamic defender with a knack for making splash plays. And then finally, Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network and NFL.com is the only one who didn't go with Ramsey. He went with DeForest Buckner out of Oregon, who's a defensive end, with Ramsey still available in this scenario. And despite the fact that he ranks Ramsey as his second overall prospect in the draft, he went with Buckner, and he said the Jags need to address the defense. Buckner's a safe pick who possesses tremendous upside. My question to you is, and we probably beat around this a little bit before, but if the grades are, for all intents and purposes, identical, and you've got a dynamic ball-hawking free safety, or you've got a dynamic, potentially dynamic pass rusher. Obviously, it's going to be impacted by free agency, but what's the better route to go?
If you listen to Dave Caldwell talk, you know, it's harder to find a free safety than it is, you know, pass rusher. I don't know if I'd necessarily
agree. It might be harder to find a free safety than a quarterback.
And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. But, you know, I do believe this. I don't think there's any truly equal grades. I don't. I think that there's certain players that stand out.
You got to stack your board some way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think there's ever a truly equal grade.
Now, do you factor in position scarcity when you're putting a final grade on a prospect?
Sure. I mean, especially at the quarterback position. You know, I mean, because the quarterback position, I mean, you listen to general managers talk, and when you've got an opportunity at getting a guy who's considered to be a franchise guy, you take him.
So, for instance,
because they don't come along very often.
Let's say you've got a defensive end who, on a 10-point scale, you grade him as a 9.0, right? And you grade the safety as an 8.5, but you feel like, just on pure ability, but you feel like it's tougher to find this free safety for you. Is that enough to elevate someone who, just on a pure grade, higher than the other guy?
No.
It's not.
No, I mean, not in my mind. You know, because I think the one thing, when you look at back end versus front end, if it's really better in the back end, is that going to provide that much more time for a pass rusher? You know what I mean? If you're really better up front, is it going to restrict the amount of time that they have to cover in the back end?
Could be significant.
Yeah, I think it's more likely to have a frontline guy, a front seven guy, pass rusher, et cetera, to make it better in the back end than a back end make it better in the front end,
right,
in my opinion.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, I just have a hard time, you know, grading safeties as a more scarce position than pass rushers.
By the way,
for me, I'd have a hard time doing that.
Jeremiah's top, I'll give you his top 10. I won't give you the analysis. Top 10 players, regardless of position, that he just put out his top 50. Laramie Tunsil, the offensive tackle at Ole Miss, number one. Jalen Ramsey, number two. He's got Miles Jack, the UCLA linebacker who missed most of the year due to injury, at number three. Joey Bosa, the Ohio State pass rusher, at four. DeForest Buckner, the guy we were just talking about, out of Oregon, at five. Ezekiel Elliott, the Ohio State running back, at six. Not saying he's worthy of being pick six, but just on a pure grade. Carson Wentz, who is becoming a draft darling, the quarterback from North Dakota State. A lot of the draft Knicks think he is the highest upside, eventually, of the quarterbacks in this class. Then Jared Goff, who is seen as, in some circles, maybe the safer pick, higher level of competition, and a lot of people have him penciled into the Cleveland Browns at number two in the early going. Jalen Smith, the Notre Dame linebacker, who
injured.
Right. Was it an ACL?
Yeah.
ACL in the final game for Jalen Smith, so that's going to impact him. And then Reggie Ragland, the Alabama linebacker, inside linebacker for the Crimson Tide. So
yeah, I look forward to watching these guys. Like I told you guys, I'm going to be kind of jumping out on a little bit earlier than I normally do, and certainly we'll have the ability to have that conversation about those top guys kind of earlier than normal. So I look forward to us having some conversation about that. I look forward to watching Ramsey, you know, because they always talk about, and I haven't watched him at all, but from them and the conversation that some of these guys are talking about how he's such a ball hawk, I can't wait to see what their definition of a ball hawk is.
I'll be curious to see what your analysis of him is and how that pairs up with what we're hearing from a lot of the other draft Knicks out there. If you want to check out Daniel Jeremiah's full list of his top 50 with analysis. Just head to NFL.com. It's right there.
Here's a question
on the front page
that I have for you, Mike.
What's
that? When does Mike Mayock put out his first list?
More, isn't it closer to the combine?
It usually is, because he'll be with NFL Network out there covering the Senior Bowl. And I know he's on the analysis of that daily with Jeremiah. But his usually comes out closer to the combine.
Because he's good now.
He is. Mayock's the guy, though. The difference between Mayock and a guy like Mel Kiper is Mayock will tell you his job and what they ask of him is to study what he considers to be the top 100 prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sitting there in round five. Mike Mayock's not necessarily the guy to break it down.
Neither am I.
Right.
I just don't have time to watch that much film.
Kiper is amazing. I mean, even if he's wrong, he generally has something to say about every prospect. You know what I mean?
No question.
Right. And which is, I think that's just pretty phenomenal. I give Mel a lot of credit. You know, I think he's a hard worker. Nobody's going to be right 100% of the time. No GM, no anybody as far as that goes. But
Mayock released his first mock draft April 29th last year.
There you go. Pretty freaking late. That's right in front of the draft, right?
Apparently, it was his only one.
Okay. And I think he does update his top 50 or top 100 list, whatever he puts out.
And Mel, obviously, he's not a guy that's, you know, grinding it out in the film room. You know, he gets a lot of his information based on conversation with a lot of different people. And that's fine. I mean, because, you know, through conversation, you can have some conversation that you consider your own.
Right.
You know, but it's Mayock is a guy that when you listen to him talk, from my experiences of watching the film of guys that he has an opinion on, he's generally spot on. You know, I trust his opinion.
All right, there you go. We'll have to wait till April, it appears, at least to get his opinion on where they'll go, not necessarily how he likes them. But he comes out with his top list of prospects a lot earlier than that, or certainly earlier than that. All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll come back on the other side. Fan feedback spotlight today asking you this. Take a look at the Jags' impending free agents on their own team. Which one of those is the most important that the Jaguars re-sign them? We tweeted out the link and posted it on the Facebook page as well. We'll take a look at what you had to offer on that. Coming up next, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Glenn Frey passes away at the age of 67. Been hearing a lot of his music and Eagles music, as I'm sure you will, all day long here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. Fan feedback spotlight today, guys, asking folks, among the Jaguars' impending free agents, who is the most critical that they re-sign themselves? Let me go through the list one more time. Unrestricted free agents include Mercedes Lewis, Chad Henne, Stefan Wisniewski, Andre Branch, Clay Harbor, Brian Anger, Sam Young, Bernard Pierce, and Brian Walters. That's the list there. Restricted free agents, Avery Jones, Ryan Davis. You can expect they'll be back, and Nick Jacobs is an exclusive rights free agent, as Tony pointed out. He either plays here or he doesn't play. The overwhelming likelihood is that a restricted free agent stays with his team, but you could certainly vote for those guys. Out of that entire list, including the restricted free agents, Jeff, which one name jumps out at you the most?
Well, I mean, as far as like value, I mean, Nick Jacobs, I mean, I'd use him just because, I mean, you're talking about big tight end, has blocking skills, Mercedes Lewis getting long in tooth, but I expect Mercedes to come back, you know, so I don't know if his role would be ready. That's good that he's restricted, because if he weren't and he was unrestricted,
get a chance somewhere else.
Yeah, he'd probably end up going somewhere else to get more play time. Clay Harbor also has a lot of value for a football team that does not carry a fullback, and Clay Harbor fills that role a lot of times. He's a very willing blocker. He's a guy that does the dirty work as the move tight end in blocking situations. He also provides, you know, a little bit of a boost in the passing game. Avery Jones, restricted guy, very good football player. I remember when he came in here as a rookie, as an undrafted guy, and I was like, why'd they pick this guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he just didn't move very good. But then I find out that Georgia, he had the ankle injury, and he was still kind of recovering from that, and that he had played at a higher level, and so Dave Caldwell and his staff were going back and kind of scouting some of his film pre-injury, And it's a good thing that they did because Avery Jones is a quality football player, and it's good that he won't have the ability to go anywhere else. Brian Walters, he's a guy that, you know, the percentage of catches to targets is one of the top players in the National Football League. He's a guy that Blake Bortles trusts, the quarterback's trust. You'd like to bring him back just because of consistency, and he's also a good backup punt returner.
What's the final answer? If you could have one of these guys.
Only one?
Only one, just top guy.
Out of all of those guys, yep. I can only have one, and let's assume they were all unrestricted.
Sure. We'll do that, and then give me so you're leaning towards a restricted free agent, man?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it'd be Avery Jones.
Avery Jones. All right, take the restricted guys out, which are Jones, Ryan Davis, and Nick Jacobs. You want the list again?
Yeah, give me the list
all right,
one more
here's
time.
The list. Mercedes, mm-hmm. Chad Henne, Wisniewski, Andre Branch, Clay Harbor, Brian Anger, Sam Young, Bernard Pierce, Brian Walters.
I don't think there's any of them that I would just go, oh, we got to have this guy. Off the top of my head, Brian Walters.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff. All right, Tony, fan feedback spotlight. Let me hit you up with what we got on Facebook because we just have a handful here and we'll roll through Twitter in a second. Damon said, re-sign Walters. A lot of these people took liberty with the question. That's fine. Re-sign Walters, very reliable receiver, our very own Welker, Edelman, Mercedes Lewis, let the man retire a Jaguar, give him a final two-year deal, and Ryan Davis can never have enough pass rushers. And then he hashtagged it with all the free agency wants to sign, including Eric Weddle, Olivier Vernon, and Mario Williams. Daniel said, my top three are number one, Ryan Davis, number two, Brian Walters, number three, Nick Jacobs, because taking Jacobs over Harbor because he gives you the same play with a lesser price tag. He doesn't believe Mercedes will be back. I agree with you that he probably will. Kevin Tappy said, I feel Brian Walters would be the top of my list. I agree with Ryan Davis and Nick Jacobs as well. Kenneth said I'd have to go with Avery Jones, and then Timothy voted for Henne on Twitter. What did we get, Tone?
Here's what we got from Alex, Chad Henne from Irish Jaguar. You can make an argument for Anger as he's the only punter on the team at the moment, but I think Brian Walters should be the priority. Good, consistent, reliable player. From Daniel, number one, Ryan Davis, two, Walters, like his grit, and three, Jacobs, with Lewis and Harbor potentially gone. From Duval Doom, took the restricted free agents out of consideration because they're likely back. So one Walters, two Henne, three Mercedes Lewis. From Matt, Chad Henne, he's kind of like Obi-Wan to Luke Skywalker for Bortles. From Jarrell, tough question. That's one overpaid list, but I'll keep Henne because a decent backup is rare. And from Isaiah, Brian Anger and Chad Henne.
I'd probably, Henne was the first guy I thought, just because if you lose your quarterback for a month. If you lose him for the season, you're probably not going anywhere anyway. But if you lose him for 2 to 3 weeks, I want a guy who's going to be unflappable. Who's I get it. People say, we've seen Henne. He's not very good. He's not going to win you games. You could do worse than Chad Henne when it comes to backup quarterbacks in the National Football
League. Absolutely.
Do a lot worse. I want a guy who knows the offense, can make the throws, is going to be primarily smart. And now, granted, there have been times when Chad Henne's turnovers have beaten you, just like Blake Bortles have beaten you. I think Henne, if you have a good, solid team around him, gives you the best chance based on right now, because the market's always a smattering of not really interested in that guy kind of guy. I don't think they're interested in guys like Robert Griffin III. I couldn't imagine, even if he got cut loose and you could pick him up for not much, Johnny Manziel being a Jacksonville Jaguar. More than likely, he ends up with the Dallas Cowboys.
I think Johnny ends up in rehab again.
He might. He might, but
I think that's where he needs to be.
Maybe. It may be the case. You got a feeling that Jerry Jones will not let him linger on the free agent market if he does make it.
Oh, Jerry loves that kind of thing.
He does. He loves – well, he's a very popular guy in the state of Texas.
Yeah. I mean, he's a Heisman winner.
Jerry's always looking to sell some tickets. They drew over 91,000 this year in Dallas, so they know what they're doing. I mean, they've got the capacity for it, certainly.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think you make a great point with Chad Henne. I mean, Brian Walters. I was thinking of it more from a frontline performance standpoint. You know, with Brian Walters, as far as being able to contribute,
nobody gets hurt. Brian Walters helps your football team a lot more. Right. I'm thinking break glass in case of emergency.
Yeah. No, so, you make a good point.
You can go any way you like with it. You know.
Yeah, but there's probably, you know, other quarterbacks, you know, we talked earlier about how, you know, if you compare Chad Henne to other backup quarterbacks, how would he rate? He would be up there. And then, yes, having a guy that's comfortable, could you Could you end up finding another guy that you'd feel good about? Yeah, probably so, but maybe not quite the comfort level that that you would have with Chad Henne. And at the same token, you brought this up. You know, if you've lost your starting quarterback for the year, what's the chances of you doing anything anyway? Probably not very good, but you make a great point. And if it's for 3-4 weeks, like Andy Dalton, you know, it was expected to be, you know, can you have somebody keep the program afloat?
I actually mentioned that. I think A.J. McCarron did a solid job. Look, he's not a guy you're going to build your franchise around.
No.
But I think he gave him a chance.
Gave him a chance, and he still got the issues that I think I talked about when he came out in the draft. He does not have a strong arm.
Right.
He can't make all the throws. And I think the thing that's probably the most irritating about A.J. McCarron is that if you ask him, he's got a very unrealistic opinion of himself.
He is arguably probably the cockiest guy that I've interviewed that is currently playing in the NFL. He doesn't hold a candle to guys like Deion Sanders and some of those other guys who are just, I mean, great. Great players.
But
they
here's the thing.
Earned
it. With Deion Sanders and guys like that, did you get the impression it was kind of a show?
Yeah, I did until I met some of them personally, and then I just think that a lot of them are big fat jerks, to be quite honest with you.
But I mean, did you get that impression, whereas when A.J. McCarron talks, you just
A.J. McCarron is
it's not a show.
No, he believes he's probably the best quarterback in the National Football League. And you can argue you need to have that belief in yourself because nobody else will if you don't. But
there's also something to be said for having a little bit of humble reality perspective to yourself so that you can work on your weaknesses. Because if you view yourself as not having a weakness, what are you going to work on to improve?
Gotcha. I'm with you, man. I'm with you. All right, we got to wrap it up, Jeff. A little healing for you. A little rehab for the shoulder coming up.
Yeah, I'll be good.
But we'll see you next.
Been
Tuesday.
There, done that. No problem.
We'll wrap it up. Final show with Jeff Lagerman. I want you to finalize your list of your top 5 favorite candy bars. That was an off the air conversation today because the folks who sponsor the Senior Bowl, Reese's, sent cases of peanut butter cups down the stadium today, and we're staring at a case of them right now.
We have 3 pounds and 6 ounces of Reese's cups in front of us.
Minus the one you ate. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that why we had all the Skittles last year? Was that Senior Bowl too?
Is that what that was?
I know we had Skittles all over the building.
Well, there was 36 2-cup packages in here. Now there's 35 and a half.
There you go. Loggy got to it, man. All right, that's going to do it for us. For Jeff Lagerman, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey signing off for Jaguars today. XL Primetime straight ahead on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me 2 claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo!
That's great job!